Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, the Total Tutor, and I'm really excited for another Empowering Women with my co-host, Dr. Shelley Hipsky. Dr. Shelley, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic. I'm so excited to interview Mary Ammons today. I am really pumped because I used to watch The Real Housewives sort of religiously and behind shut doors. I always considered it kind of like junk food for my brain. So it's so fun that I actually get to befriend her and get to talk to her. And I found her a fascinating person on the show, and getting to hang out with her last week at the Andy Russell tournament was a blast. And now I'd love to introduce her. So this is Mary Ammons. She was on The Real Housewives of D.C. She's a second-generation Washingtonian. She spent time at the Kennedy residencies as a child, and she is the granddaughter of legendary radio and TV personality Arthur Godfrey. She was married to her husband, Rich, for 20 years, and she has 5 beautiful children, and I loved following their little life stories on the show. And I can totally relate to when she says that her life is never dull, and she is part of controlled chaos. I love that, Mary. I live that type of lifestyle as well. And I'm also very impressed with the charitable and philanthropic work that you do, and the PR work that you're doing. And I foresee you doing a lot of the acting and those type of things in your future. And I really want to delve into who you are, who you're becoming, and what the future holds for you. So, do we get started here, Neil?
Yeah, absolutely. Mary, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. And Shelley, it was such a pleasure spending some time with you. We're kind of solving the problems of our lives and of the world, and
having
fun.
Yeah, I think for women like us that solve problems of the world, like we do it by, you know, meeting other women that have common interests and common goals, mm-hmm. and we sort of empower each other. And I think that's a fabulous way to live. And that's what this radio show is all about, is reaching out to people that are the top in their fields and that are truly either empowered or becoming empowered. You're currently going through a life transition right now. Can you talk to us about that? Because I know a lot of my listeners are going through the same thing. I reached out to one of my friends and said that I was interviewing her, and she was a single mom of 5 kids. Now she's got 7 kids, and she's a working mom. So she could kind of relate to your personal story.
God bless her.
I know. She's amazing. That's Alice, and she'll be listening to this, I'm sure, once it's broadcast.
Well, go girl. You go girl, Alice. keep it up, being an inspiration to your kids and to everyone that's watching you. Yes, I am going through quite a transition, and I'm choosing to use it to really become a transformation. And everyone goes through struggles in their lives, no matter who you are, where you come from, what your economic status is. Everybody has some kind of struggles that they encounter in their lives. So I am in the middle of one. I'm going through a divorce, which is no fun. And
I'm right there with you, girl.
it's nothing that I thought would be as difficult. And I don't recommend it. So all you out there who are considering it, just really dig deep and see if it's something that you can turn around, because it's no fun. Anyway, I am definitely going through a big change in my life and just deciding to use the struggle to really empower myself, to influence my kids, to really dig inside of themselves and I'll let them know that they can get through anything, as I'm hopefully being an example for. And there are really hard days and there are really victorious days. So it's been an interesting little journey over the past couple of years as we go through this. But I'm starting to really understand how important it is for me to embrace myself, embrace my talents and my gifts, and really just keep moving forward and allow this to shape me, because I'm a woman of faith. I believe in my Creator, and I believe that there are no accidents in this life, and God allows us to go through valleys to learn more about ourselves and to learn to rely on Him and reach outside of ourselves as well, and just also inspire others as we get through it. We have a testimony now to say that you can get through it. And so I'm in the process of writing my story. I'm going to be sharing, it's going to be a memoir, and it's going to be an inspiring story, hopefully an inspiring story of what I come from and where I'm headed. And also the influence that my grandfather had on me as a child to get into the entertainment business. And there are a lot of parallels in our lives, he and I. And so I feel like I'm called to carry the torch and to be a light in the world. And that's really one of the reasons I got into the show, is that it was a good opportunity for me to just kind of break out into the business and also showcase my charity work that I do. I started a charity in 2006 called Labels for Love, and I raise money for women's and children's causes by doing unique fashion and art-inspired events here in D.C. So it's worked out, and so here I am. If you'd asked me about 5 years ago if I'd be in this place with 20,000 Twitter followers, let alone what was Twitter 5 years ago. but to have a following and to be able to inspire and encourage people is the biggest blessing for me in this whole process. So that's where I'm headed with it. And, you never know. And I am a one day at a time person. I don't like to create history before it happens and worry too much about things. So I'm really learning to breathe deeply and embrace each day and really just be an example and hopefully an inspiration.
Well, absolutely, Mary. And I what I've gathered from our conversations before in a lot of ways is, because I do know Mary very well, Shelly. So it's like I could, because we've had tons of conversations, especially with some of the projects we've been working on together. And especially, I'm really excited about what we're going to do in radio. But what I've gathered from this life-changing experience is that you had to embrace and kind of build a focus in your life, a change in your life in so many ways because of the challenges of the divorce, the challenges of now being on your own. What are you going to do next? What direction to go? Am I going to go reality television show, or am I going to go and look at specifically something else? But I think that you've kind of created a mission statement through a lot of your journey in the last couple months. So can you tell our listeners how you're going to be empowered and how you're empowering others?
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to use my book to really kind of establish who I am outside of The Real Housewives. There was, just a small little snippet of my life, and that took place almost 4 years ago. So a lot has happened since then, and a lot of change has happened. A lot of growth has happened within me. So I'm excited to really share my story and kind of establish that as my quote-unquote brand that I'm establishing. And my long-term goals, I would love to have my own talk show. I would love to showcase and allow people to share their stories. I'm fascinated by people. I really am. I just love sitting with people and getting to know them. In fact, that has been one of the greatest blessings for me in this exposure on television, is that I get to meet people that I never would have been able to meet just on the street, just casually, just when people recognize me, they'll come up and just say something nice, about my family or myself or whatever. And I'll have an opportunity to really turn the conversation on them and figure out who they are. So it's been a real blessing. In fact, I've had countless encounters with people, especially when I'm traveling, where they'll just, come up and say hi and introduce themselves. And I've made some pretty pretty interesting friends that way. I love that opportunity. And there are a lot of people that are quote unquote famous that really shun that. And I really count it a blessing to have the opportunity to get to know people that I never would ever get to know and hear their story. So my hopes and dreams are to have my own show someday. But I'm going to start with my book, and if a reality show opportunity comes my way, I'm going to have to be very specific about the intention and what it's going to do, if it's going to be a good thing for me and my family. The Real Housewives was a good opportunity, and I am in some ways very happy that it did not go forward, because I ended up, you know, with a very clean image, which is who I am, and family-oriented woman, and very honest. So I'm grateful for that. But I think going forward, there was a risk to get sort of twisted up into some drama and chaos that I might not have been able to control, just due to editing and other factors. So I actually had a gut when I decided to do this, that I had an idea that it was just going to be a one-shot deal for me, and that it was going to give me opportunities that I would never have had. And that's exactly what's happened. So I'm blessed and I'm grateful and I'm excited about what's ahead. And there's some uncertainty, but it's okay. It's my job to figure it out and to embrace what God has for me and just go get it and be the best I can be.
That's awesome. So you have a much more public life than you had a few years ago.
I do.
I'm just thinking this popped in my head, because before I had announced that I was going through a divorce or anything, I was at this Women Empowerment Conference, and the leader of the conference kind of pointed me out and said, "Dr. Shelley," because I have this radio show and a TV show and all my books, and she said, "Dr. Shelley, what's going on in your perfect life?" And, like, I had to stand up, and, like, tears had sprung to my eyes, Mary. I was like...
I mean,
that's so perfect right now.
Yeah, I know.
My mouth just, like, dropped. And I said, you know, right now I'm currently finding my way into a divorce and trying to figure out how I'm going to be a single mommy and a single working mommy at that. And, like, afterwards, everybody just came up and gave me a big hug, and they were so supportive. Mm. But I think it's different when you live sort of a public lifestyle and you're out there for people to either judge or make snap decisions on you based on your persona in the media. How has that played into your own personal life?
I really try to overlook that and rise above all that, because I just have to be responsible for my own self and my own family and my own life and manage me. And I cannot really buy into people's judgments or opinions at all. And that's a hard thing to do, because there are many opportunities out there in the public to trash people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, fortunately, I think that my image is respected enough that people have not been rude or condescending or judgmental that I've seen. And I think they just understand that it's a private matter, and I'm focused on my charity work and getting myself back out there in a positive way to inspire and influence. So I think people respect that, and it is hard though when you're in the public eye. You can't really. It's hard to relax some days.
Mm-hmm.
But I made a decision when I first decided to go on the show. In fact, there were times on the show where I had no makeup on. I'd just come from my tennis practice. And that's when I look at myself and I'm like, that's me. That's the real me, where I'm not all glammed up, sitting in front of Diva Lights, having an interview, talking about something that happened 3 or 4 months ago that I really don't even care about. And they have me all dolled up in makeup. you know, and I just decided to be myself, and I think that is all I can do, and it's been a huge growing experience for me to really accept myself, especially now that I'm in the public eye, and I like to be an example of just being real. So
yeah.
I am me, and that's how you get.
I love it. When we hung out the other day, and you were like, "I'm a hippie chick," I was like, "You're so cool. Like, you're just like real. You're just like somebody that we could all just hang out with." And I do think that came across on the show. I agree that you did come off as the nice girl, and you know, a mommy, and that type of thing. And that's a beautiful thing. That doesn't always happen on Bravo. I know that.
Well,
it doesn't happen ever.
Exactly. So. Be proud of that title.
So to tell you the working title of my book that I'm working on, it's called Real Talk with a Real Housewife.
I love it.
Okay.
So I am real. That's who I am.
All right, perfect. We're going to have to take a quick break. And when we get back, more Dr. Shelley Hipsky and Mary Amons, Empowering Women. And I think that we really want to talk about some of the changes in her life, some more, where she's going, where she's headed, because she has a lot of opportunities. But Dr. Shelley and I will ask those hard questions. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Empowering Women. I'm Neil Haley, the Total Tutor, and I'm with Dr. Shelley Hipsky and our very interesting guest who I've interviewed many times, Mary Amons. And Dr. Shelley, I tell you, we're learning a lot about her. And again, when we hung out with her and when I've hung out with her, she's so real, unlike the Real Housewives in so many ways.
I don't know if we want to bash the whole problem.
Yeah, we can't generalize. Actually, I have a couple of friends that are housewives that I really do like and find to be very authentic.
So I'm going to be surprised. I'm going to be surprised about that. But that's the public's perception, Mary. Honestly,
it is. It really is.
And again, I'm joking around. But Shelley, would you speak to that? That is the public's perception based on certain shows and how certain people act on the Real Housewives brand. The
oh
ones
goodness.
That are really
yes.
real, they don't think of those, like the ones like yourself that are trying to be a mom, trying to raise kids and have a family and a business, while others are just literally just putting the wrong part of reality on, right, Shelley? Kind of speak up that and then ask a question.
Yeah, I will admit that. But, I mean, it's addictive. I mean, we can't look away. It's like a train wreck. So I can completely understand from the audience's point of view, and I understand, you know, they're trying to get ratings. I get that, too. It's very entertaining. But, yeah, I mean, I wonder, I mean, how many of these women do you feel, Mary, are really, truly authentic? You said that you have some friends. Could you tell us a couple of those friends that you feel are truly real and authentic?
Well, of course, the girls that were on my show with me are very down-to-earth, very authentic. In fact, Linda is one of my dearest friends and consider her a mentor. She's my favorite, of course. And Kat, I really love her a lot. She's very down-to-earth, says it like it is, no BS. I mean, she is no BS. I mean, really no BS. And Stacey as well. She's a very dedicated mom. She too is going through a divorce as well. I think she's final. She's very educated, very smart, and has a wonderful charity that she runs here. So those girls I know very well and would say that they are very down-to-earth and authentic. I then know Aviva Drescher from the New York show. She's a wonderful mom. She's, in fact, when she just got hired to go on the New York show, she kind of was in a panic because I think she was very worried about going on and what could possibly happen that could be damaging to her family, because she is a family woman and very devoted to her kids and husband.
Mm-hmm.
And also did it for charitable purposes. So Aviva is one of them. There are a few others. I do like Alex and Simon a lot. They're very down to earth, very honest.
Really? That's good.
I've spent some time with them. And we've had a lot of fun getting to know each other. And there are a couple of others out there that I that I enjoy being around. I can't say that I know them well enough to say that they're really, really down to earth and authentic. But it's funny. We kind of have this little sorority going.
I'm sure. You're like alums.
It is. And we're considered the ex-wives.
Well, and then look at Orange County and how hardly any of them are married anyways. But let's go. I want to go into the, but again, Mary.
No, I need to clarify this, Neil. We're Andy Cohen's ex-wives.
Okay, that's perfect.
Because we were picked up.
That's perfect. So what Mary, you're trying to do in the book, and I guess also when you've been writing the book, you've gone through a kind of transformation yourself. Can you tell us a little bit about that, because that really has changed you since I've gotten to know you, that you really have a purpose and a sense of things based on what you've gone through.
Yes. I had a very blessed opportunity to go out to Boise, Idaho recently and go through a program called the Focus Seminars. And it's a spiritually based program, but it's not really the focus. There's a lot of psychological work where they have you going into your childhood and into your, your family of origin issues with your parents. Because I don't care how great your parents are and how wonderful your family might be, there are all kinds of things that you bring forward into your life that can be unhealthy or not empowering to yourself as a person. And so I had an opportunity to really kind of strip away a lot of those things that I carry forward. And I do. I am so blessed to say I have two incredible parents who have been so dedicated and devoted to our family. I'm the oldest of seven, and I'm so lucky and blessed to have the parents that I do. And they're still, they're in their 70s, and my mom rides 100 miles on her bicycle every day, or not every day, every week.
Incredible.
And she's a full-time nurse. My dad is still very, very much working and pursuing business as a lobbyist. But we all have stuff that we bring forward from our childhood, because our parents are human beings. And, of course, human beings are not perfect. And it's also a way for me to really figure out what I need to do to be the best mom I can be and the best example I can be to my children as well, because I am also a human being, and I'm also going through, putting them through a really hard time, and I want to make sure that I'm the best that I can be for them going through this struggle, because we're all in this together and we're all going to be okay. And that's what I tell them every day, and that, if we just stick together and dig deep inside ourselves, that we will definitely thrive and flourish through this painful time. And I don't think we grow until we go through struggles. So I'm trying to stay as positive as I can and encourage them to really go out and be who they need to be in the world, and use this struggle as a way to grow themselves. But so I had this opportunity to go to this focus seminar, and it really has been an enormous influence and impact on my life, where I just was able to, and I really did go in there with a very open heart and just wanting to make the best of this opportunity and this time that I was spending on really finding myself, because I feel like being married so young and having kids so young at the age of 19, and just kind of getting into a playhouse situation where we just, I became a mom and a wife and a housewife at the age of 19. And
wow.
there's a lot of development that goes on in those, early decade between 20 and 30. And being as busy as I was and having kids and pregnant and, packing lunches and changing diapers and doing all that stuff that we do as moms, I didn't have the opportunity to really know who I was. And so that's been my journey sort of through my 30s and into my 40s now. And I feel like I just, an intense workshop on myself to really pull back a lot of stuff that I've been carrying around and empower me at this very critical time in my life and in the life of my family here to be, to really find my true self and be the best mom and woman I can be. So that's going to be a large part of my book is the journey that I've been on with myself and how, as women, it's so easy to get lost with the chaos and the busyness of being, you know, a mom and a working mom and a single mom. And, you know, it's not easy. So I'm paying close attention to how to really strip away a lot of garbage that I've been carrying around and free myself up to really find my true purpose in life and leave a legacy that's going to be something that my kids and their kids will be very proud of.
That's beautiful. I can see you're already doing it, and I think you're just going to emerge like a butterfly and just spread your wings and make this happen for you and your family. I'm proud to know you, Mary.
Well, thank you, Shelley. And I have to say, I mean, it sounds like everything's peachy perfect, but it's you know, I have really hard days where I wake up and I'm really struggling and wondering how the hell this happened and how the hell I got here and, you know, what I'm going to do today to really make a change and be my best. And then there are days where I wake up and I'm like, wow, this is going to be the best day. And I have so much to look forward to. So I mean, it really is a roller coaster, as you know, going through it.
Absolutely. I'm on that ride with you, sister.
Yeah, you just go through all kinds of emotions that are up and down. So I'm doing my best to really stay as stable and steady as possible and really positive and moving forward.
Excellent.
Well, fantastic. Listening to the whole thing, Mary, and also Shelley. So the question I wanted to ask you, how would you define yourself as empowering? Because that's always what Dr. Shelley asks, and I'm gonna jump in on this one because I know she's moved by what you've said today, Mary, and it just feels like a cup of coffee today, right, Shelley? How we've been talking to each other. But how do you see yourself as empowering? How do you want to empower others? And you kind of talked about it a little bit, but how do you consider yourself an empowering woman?
I think the best way that I can be empowering to other women is to just be honest and open with my struggles. And I feel like I've been gifted with that just in my personality and my character. I feel very comfortable sharing a lot. In fact, my family often wonders why I share so much and worries that I'm sharing too much. But I'm just innately a trusting person, and I'd much rather be trusting and get hurt or burned after trusting someone rather than not trusting someone and missing the opportunity to really get to know them, inspire them, be inspired. So I feel like just my own self-honesty, being honest with myself, and then sharing my own truth and, you know, the struggles that I've been through, because I have lived a lifestyle that has been, you know, not all that real. And I've had to struggle with the fact that, you know, what you saw on the outside was not at all what was going on the inside. And that is a burden that I carry as far as, you know, going on TV and opening up my home and showcasing my beautiful home that I'm, you know, poured my heart and soul into. And really there was a lot of pain going on inside at that time that I was just covering. And that's also going to be part of my story as well, is just living a facade that is just such a burden. And so just by being open and sharing myself, I think is going to be inspiring and empowering to women to do that themselves and to just get real with themselves. And if they're in a scenario where they need to protect themselves in a marriage or in a job or in a relationship, it doesn't matter. They need to take care of themselves and learn what that means and not feel guilty about it.
Absolutely. Sounds all right to me. It all makes total sense to me, particularly where I'm at in my life and where so many of my friends are at in their lives. And I think this is really going to resonate with a lot of our audience, just because you are an empowering woman, Mary. So thank you for bringing your story here today.
And thank you, Shelley, for the work you're doing.
Thank you.
I was very inspired by getting to know you and look forward to more time together and possibly working on some projects where we can really make an impact for empowering women.
I love it. I love it.
Well, fantastic. Mary, where can we find more information on you, learn more about you and what you do?
My Twitter is Mary Ammons, at Mary Ammons. My website is maryammons.com, and that's where you can follow me just personally and in my career. And then my charitable website is called labelsforlove.org.
All right. Well, fantastic. Good talking to everyone. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. It's Facebook. And really excited always with the great interviews. But I really, really like this guy, and because he really is doing some fantastic things for The Biggest Loser, Mark Cornelison. Mark, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks, Neil. It's good to be back on.
Oh, I'm excited because we were kind of just getting into the spot where you're at the ranch, and we didn't go into specifically the life-changing process story. You just talked about your trainers and how you really benefited, but really once you got picked in the ranch, we kind of ran out of time. So let's bring our listeners back a little bit. Specifically, now it's week one at the ranch. You're on television now because remember you said the process of getting picked and thinking, is it going to happen? Am I going to be in the house? All those things were through your mind. But finally, when you knew you were in the competition, it was pretty crazy, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you're not really thinking that when you're going through the whole interview process and you're excited thinking, man, this could be really an awesome experience. I want to get out there, you know, for my son and I, we were going, man, this would be fantastic. When it actually happens and you end up and you're there, there really is, I think for everybody that was there, there's a point of realizing, wow, what did we just do? I mean, we're putting this problem we've had for most of us our entire lives, we're putting it out there public. You know, this is more than, all of a sudden it becomes more than just you're on TV. It's you're living with other people who have different opinions and lives than you've ever had, but you all share this one thing, and now we're putting it out there in front of America. So there's definitely a reality sort of check that hits you once you get there and once you're on the show.
And is it weird, you know, being filmed all the time? It must be.
Absolutely, yeah. The first, it took about a good 2 weeks to kind of get used to cameras everywhere. We would have what they call dark days, which meant there were no guys running around with cameras filming us. But there still were cameras in the house that were more for security kind of based. But they kept tabs on us pretty good when we were there. But it takes about a week and a half or 2 weeks, and you kind of, you know, you're thinking about the camera. You're more, you know, you'll start talking to somebody, and a guy will run up with a camera, and it can affect your conversation. But within a pretty short time, you're just going, okay, this is part of the deal, and you almost get to where you don't even know that they're there. But they're watching us. They're watching us all the time, for sure.
Well, and so once you're in this process and you first are there, you're not that motivated to lose the weight yet, are you, Mark? Have you developed that shift yet, or are you just in the process of beginning this challenge?
I think all of us are thinking, you know, this is we're hearing all the time from the producers and from everybody, think 5 years down the road. We want health. We want you to be healthy. So we're thinking that, but the process, I mean, it's hard. It's all the way to the very end, it was difficult with the amount of workouts and all the changes that were happening. So I think probably early on, Neil, the first thing you're thinking is just survival. I don't think we're thinking weight loss. I don't think we're thinking health. We're just going, I just want to make it through every day. And you just kind of take it a day at a time to get your way through. And then as the weight starts to come off, that's when it starts getting really exciting. That's when it starts to really get fun. But especially early on, it's just a matter of waking up in the morning and going, okay, I just want to make it through this day and start again tomorrow, kind of a feel.
Are you being strategic in looking at your competition, thinking I have a shot at this when you're started, or are you more about I want to get healthy? Are you just the survival, but also thinking about goals? But are you looking, hey, maybe I can lose more weight than this person?
Yeah, you know, I never had any illusion in with me that I was going to win it or that I was going to beat everybody. I was the smallest guy that's ever been cast on the show. My son and I got to go out there together. He really needed it, and in a lot of ways, I wanted the help. I wanted to get this under control in my life. But I really thought I'd be there just not but a couple of weeks and probably be gone because I didn't have as much weight to lose. So I didn't really worry about the competition part of it. I looked at people based on who's working, who's putting the effort in, who's taking advantage of this opportunity. And but it was, for me, it never was about looking at somebody going, okay, I think I can take them. I think that just never registered with me. There were others that were there. That was their goal from day one. And that was okay. I mean, that's part of the fact it's a show, it's television, but it's also a game. And it made sense for some of them to see it that way. That just was not my main thing. So more it was just, I wanted to get some tips. I want to get some life practices that are going to carry with me beyond the show. If that happens in a couple of weeks, if I'm here longer than that, then I'm going to get absolutely everything I can because I want this to last. I want this to be a life change for me. That's all I was thinking.
So tell me about the story now of what happened. Because, again, I've watched some of The Biggest Losers, but again, this was the couples one. So tell me what happened and when did you get eliminated? Did you made it a couple weeks, right?
I actually made it 5.5 months.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Okay, so that's a huge surprise for you. Man, we're going to have to part three, Mark. You should. This is okay, so, again, look at me, last minute. So let's go specifically the story then. Now, you thought you were only going to last. You're the smallest guy, and so you lasted 5.5 months, so you were doing very, very well for yourself. When did that finally that switch go on? You know what? I got to change the way I eat. I know I can compete against these people. What was that aha moment?
Really, I think within the first 2 weeks, I realized I still didn't know how long I would be able to make it just because of my size, but it really was this. I'm taking time because I mean when we're out there, Neil, there's no communication at home. So you don't have there's no TV, there's no internet, there's no phone calls, there's nothing. And I'm very much a family person. I have two younger kids that were not out there. My wife, we've been married for almost 24 years. We're a very, very close family. So about 2 weeks in, I was going, if I'm going to take this time away from my family and be in this isolated spot, I'm going to walk away with absolutely everything I possibly can from it. This is going to be something that I'm grabbing a hold of for life. And it really stemmed from my feeling of going, I have sacrificed a whole lot. My job was very gracious and fantastic about letting me go. My wife was fantastic. My two other kids were going, Dad, go do this. For them to invest that much in me and allow this opportunity, it was really about 2 weeks in that I went, I'm grabbing up everything I can. I am going to make this thing be everything that it possibly can be so that I truly have life change out of it, not just gimmicky, I was on a TV show kind of a thing.
Well, it sounds like it, and congrats again for being able to go that far. So who was the biggest influence on the ranch with you, for you? Who gave you that really kept you motivated to keep going? First of all, let's go with one of the trainers. Then secondly, let's go with one of your castmates that changed
sure.
it to. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was on my season, there were only two trainers. We had Bob Harper and Dolvet. And with the way it worked, I had Dolvet. And I tell you what, it was perfect. I love Dolvet. And that man is just, we still keep in touch. He still keeps tabs on me, and we text every now and then. I mean, he is the real deal. He knew, you know, there's a TV side of it, and then there's the real person side of it. And you could, you know, you get kind of used to when the cameras are rolling, there's certain things the cameras want to see. And than when the cameras are off or when it's a different thing. I mean, you got to see a real person. So Dole Vet was huge for me. We just absolutely connected, and he was perfect. But as far as the rest of as far as the people there on the ranch, really there were two. One was a guy who was from Michigan, who was also a pastor, and his name was Buddy Hsu. Buddy and I have become just super close friends. We have maintained a very strong friendship and relationship even beyond the show. We motivate each other, we push each other, we check in on each other. And even with the expanse of me being in Texas and him being in Michigan, he is easily my closest friend and has really been a huge motivator for me. We've actually gotten to travel a little bit together and go speak in some of these opportunities that have come up, so the two of us get to go, and just absolutely love the connection with him. Probably on the show, the greatest competitor for me was Kim, and Kim was the professional wrestler who had broken her back during a match, and then completed the match back when she was doing the pro wrestling. She's just an amazing woman, and there was just something about the two of us that we really clicked early on as far as competition. And she always wanted to try to beat me, and I always wanted to try to beat Kim. And even now when she and I talk and connect with each other, there's always this kind of joking, kind of a banter that goes back and forth that continues on. So those are really the key people. Everybody on the ranch encourages, and it was great for each other, but those are really – so that definitely for the trainer side of it, and Kim and Buddy were absolutely my motivators and still are in a lot of ways.
Well, what's amazing is we're going to kind of go a little bit more, and we're going to have part three of this, Mark, and I got to make sure that you did get the link of the last interviews. It went all over the place, and I got to make sure I tweet you out this time because I forgot your Twitter. It's just amazing if you would, I don't know if you check up and see who I've interviewed in the last month since we talked. It's been pretty crazy. I don't know if you're on Facebook personally, but we need to connect that way as well so you can see what's going on with me. Well, what happens next, again, I guess, is the amazing thing that you just keep not getting voted off. And it's got to be something that's such a huge surprise for you because you thought, oh, I'm going to last 2 or 3 weeks, and just things keep going and everything comes into place. And you say, wow, I can really do this.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was just, Neil, there was just something that kept, you know, my relationship with God is absolutely everything to me. And there was something in me that as I would just keep going and keep pushing and getting strength from God, that it was like, I couldn't give up. I couldn't stop. There was never a point that I was like, he was fueling me and feeding that. And so every week, I'd go into it and I'd go, okay, this could be my last week, so I'm going to give it everything I've got. And I would either our team would win the weigh-in so there was no vote, or I would just have really surprising weight loss for a guy my size, or if we did have to vote, I wasn't one of the ones being considered. It was just outstanding to watch that over weeks and weeks and weeks. And after I got off the show, I was able to look at, like, different like NBC site and stuff like that, and people, because ours was an 18 episode season, I made it through 16 of the episodes, like I said, for 5.5 months, and by week 10 people are going, how long is Mark going to hang in there? I mean, he's losing lots of weight, he just keeps going. It was just crazy. But every week that we would get done with weigh-in and I was still there, I would just go, okay, God, you got me here for another week. Yeah, there's something still going there.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we'll do next is go from what we're going to talk about next month on the show and just put the date out there, but it'll have to be the following week because I'm going to be in Hilton Head, South Carolina until June 21st. So that week in June when I return, we'll have to have you back on the show, and I'll tell you how my life's changed again, Mark, since then. But really talking about what happens at the end, and then also how you followed through with your dream and continue to be a great witness for people in weight loss. And I commend you for that. So, Mark, where can we find more information on you and learn more about you?
You can, I'd love it for people to follow me on Facebook, to find me on Facebook and add me on there. You can just look for, just search Mark Cornelison on Facebook, and there's a, I've got a fan page on there as well as just my personal site. If you're a Twitter person, you can just look for Mark T. Core, M-A-R-K, the letter T as in Todd, and C-O-R. I'd love to have followers on there as well, and we try to tweet out stuff and keep in touch with people, and I try to keep my schedule on there so people know where I'm traveling. If I'm going to go speak, I love for people to come out and just visit and get to talk to them and encourage them in their journey as well. So those are the best couple of ways, I think, to connect with me.
Well, and I think that really we both have a mission of, again, helping people lose weight in the challenge and to get to the certain point. And then also a lot of my business partners' plans, and I'm on the board of Mission G, how we're looking to, again, feed the children all over the world, and some of the initiatives with the veterans that we need to definitely connect, because we have similar ideas and to try to really make a difference. So we'll definitely stay in touch and have you back next month. So take care, Mark.
I love it. That'd be great.
All right.
Thanks, Neil.
All right. Take care. Bye. All right. You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show, powered by the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity segment. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And I'm really honored to welcome the program. I guess, as you can hear from the background, he's in Los Angeles, California, but he's a Grammy Award winner, musician, Daniel Ho. Daniel, thanks for calling.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you for having me on your program. And I apologize for the plane passing overhead.
Hey, I'm used to that stuff. Don't worry. It's better. At least you're not hearing a plane passing over my studio, or we'd have some problems. All right. So maybe you can hear some birds chirping in the background, because I wanted to get some fresh air today, because it's not such a hot day. Like, it was like 90 in Pittsburgh a couple days ago, down at 52 degrees, and I have a sweatshirt on. I just can't believe the difference, Daniel. So basically tell our audience, first of all, your background, and then we're going to go into how your career started as a musician.
I was born and raised in Honolulu, Hawaii, and I moved to Los Angeles when I was 18 years old, right after high school, to attend the Grove School of Music, and I majored in composing, arranging, and film scoring. And I dabble around with instruments. I play the rhythm section instruments, bass and piano, guitar, ukulele, and sing a little bit. And I've been working in the music business for over 20 years, that's about it. Like, I do my own audio engineering as well, like mixing and mastering and stuff like that.
So you're a jack of all trades then, Daniel, right?
Yes, that's what they say, master of none.
All right, well, hey, anyone that's a Grammy, forget about it. You're a master of something. So, Daniel, tell us your background, how you decided to become involved in music. Was it just a basic situation where your family was involved in it, or how did it work?
Well, my dad loved music. He's a chemist at Pearl Harbor. And my brother is an electrical engineer. My mom passed away when I was about 5 years old. But she taught me how to play those little red toy pianos that Schroeder plays in Peanuts. And I learned Mary Had a Little Lamb. That was my first introduction to musical instruments. And my dad noticed that I took a liking to it and sent me to all kinds of music lessons, starting with the organ in second grade, and then ukulele is what all kids play in Hawaii, or most kids do. I picked it up in the third grade, and then moved on to classical guitar in the fourth grade, and piano in the fifth grade, and drums in seventh grade, and bass, and just kind of, I never stuck to any one instrument, and so I guess that's why I became a composer or writer, because it was a way to utilize my knowledge with the different instruments and put the pieces together, so to speak.
Interesting. Okay. So when did you figure out you have to be kind of a different part of music? What age did you figure that out?
I knew it from when I was in grade school, believe it or not. I never had an interest in doing anything else. I had a couple of fallback plans, career thoughts, but it was something that I was determined to do, and I was going to give it a go. And, you know, when I moved to LA, I told myself, look, when the money runs out and I really can't make this work, then I'm going to move back to Hawaii. And I'm still here, so thank God.
Yeah, well, and that's what lots of people say when they make their journey to LA. Isn't that right, Daniel?
You know, LA is that kind of place. You know, we all come here and we give it a shot, or New York or Nashville or, you know, entertainment business, and we do our best. And I think perseverance is just a huge part of it. I was, I guess you could say I was, you know, kind of depressed for a couple of years, just, you know, living in not so wonderful conditions, you know, renting a room, sleeping on the floor in a rat-infested house, toilet overflowing every month. You know, I had five roommates, and there were only four rooms. Someone was living in the living room as well, and that went on for a year. And it wasn't what I was used to, but, you know, it makes you tougher, and it's something that most of us have to go through in the music industry. There's no clear path from point A to point B. You don't graduate with a degree and end up with a career. So, yeah, you kind of feel your way around. And, you know, I think being versatile is useful because I've had to do all kinds of jobs, from copying music to orchestrating for B films to playing keyboards in Thibaut Bryson's band and, you know, you name it. You just kind of make ends meet and pay the bills. And with all of those, are, you know, music lessons.
Right.
And, you know, pick up a little bit of knowledge, and that will help you, you know, achieve whatever your goal might be in music.
Okay, so Daniel, basically you're telling me you're kind of starving in L.A. When was your big break? When did you know? What happened? Did you have a great connection, or did you just keep persevering to finally one of those doors opened?
I got fortunate early on. My first break came when I was about 20, my early 20s, maybe 22 or 23. I got signed to a record deal in contemporary jazz. What smooth jazz is now. It was the style of music that I think Dave Grusin and David Sanborn and people like that pioneered back in the early, well, actually, they started it in the 80s or maybe even the late 70s. I think probably the 80s. But it was very popular in the early 90s. There was a record label called GRP, and I wasn't on that label, but I had a band called Kilauea. Kilauea is one of the active volcano in Hawaii. I was going to say one of two, but I think it's the only active volcano in Hawaii. And we did instrumental contemporary jazz, and I played piano, and I wrote, and I led the group. And I think that was my first break. And I started a publishing company with the material I wrote, and it was used a lot in background music, elevators and airports and things like that. And that kind of got me on my way. And around the mid-90s, I decided to go independent and started a record label. And that was a struggle. You know, we were selling, like, almost nothing in the beginning because it's not really a record label when you have only one record.
Right, right.
That's called a vanity press. I started out that way, and that's what I've been doing since the mid-90s, and I, you know, done over 100 CDs now.
Definitely, Daniel. And so you're kind of going through the motions, getting experience. Tell us about when you were nominated for a Grammy. What happened? Give us the story.
That was, I'm going to guess, around 8 years ago, and I received a very unusually large order from my distributor in Hawaii. And it didn't make any sense to me. I thought maybe they added a zero by accident. And they said congratulations at the bottom of the fax. And that was, you know, people still faxed back then. So I called them and asked, what is this congratulations about? And they said, well, you're nominated for a Grammy. Like, what? it came as a huge surprise because I'm an independent musician. I have a small label that my wife and I run. We, you know, work out of our home, and it's just not something that you would expect as an independent musician. Usually you think, okay, you know, people on major labels like Warner Brothers and so on, Sony would, you know, win Grammys and stuff like that, and not anything I ever dreamed of attaining. It was never a goal, never, you know, within my reach.
Okay, so I'm correct. You did win, right? You've won a few, right? Am I on the right track on that?
I won 6 in a row every year.
Yeah,
that time.
So wow, 6 in a row. Wow. So just tell us the first Grammy experience once you got your name called. That must have been awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was probably the high point, the very first one of my career. It was surreal, unbelievable, and just something I'm always grateful for because it, I guess, it, you know, it's just something, it's a very short bio, I guess is a good way to describe it. And it has certainly helped take my career in a different direction, in a very positive direction since then. And, you know, I'm also grateful for all the others as well because it sort of establishes a kind of consistency and that, you know, we're working hard to improve every year and learn more, practice more, be a better audio engineer and composer and player and all those things. So it's motivating.
Well, it sounds like it's motivating and it took your career off, didn't it? Once you won that, it's helped with getting a lot of work, right?
Yes, it has. A lot of them were for, produced as a producer, so I started getting a lot of requests to produce albums, produce this album, that album, and other artists and things. And so, you know, as a musician, you take the work as it comes, and you just keep going with the flow. I guess, you know, I don't know what I'm going to be doing tomorrow, but I ended up taking all these jobs, and I was doing about 9 records a year for about 5 years, and it was way too much for me to do because I'm doing every aspect of it, from playing the instruments to, you know, doing the photography, graphic design, my wife and I do, and, you know, mixing and mastering and all kinds of things, and it got to be way too much work. So a few years ago, I was fortunate enough to take a different direction. Now I focus primarily on just my original music and things that I want to do, books I want to write and things like that. So it's been very nice to get back to being an artist.
Exactly. So you accomplish everything in one area, so you want to go to another area and be successful in that area.
Yeah. The drummer I've been playing with for 20 years, Randy Drake, he's getting his PhD in ethnomusicology right now. He graduated from North Texas State many years ago with a degree in drums, and he explained to me, and it made perfect sense, like a light bulb went off. He said, you know, it takes a lifetime to master an instrument, but it also takes a lifetime to understand the music behind what you're playing. So what he did was he started off by, he's a virtual drummer, he's a studio musician and everything, and a wonderful person, but now he's going back and learning about music. What is he playing, the kinds of rhythms he's playing, learning how to arrange for, you know, all different genres and world music and so on. And I think I did the opposite. I spent all my time learning about how to put music together. I didn't spend the 10,000 hours I needed to on my piano or guitar or ukulele. Her voice. So that's what I'm doing.
Okay, so Daniel, what current projects are you promoting right now?
What am I promoting right now?
Yes.
I have a number of different things that I'm doing. I'm kind of going out and touring my new vocal CD, This Dream Begins. I also have another CD that was nominated this year in the world music category, called On a Gentle Island Breeze.